Welcome to Tunnel Talk, a No Facts, All Feelings Wrestling Podcast. I'm Allie.
I'm Ann.
And I'm Leah.
How's everybody doing this week?
Another week depleted.
The faces that I just got. Like, it's like you did both look at me like, I didn't think she'd try this again.
How do you think we're doing, Allie?
I guess bad. I'm doing pretty bad, but, you know, you gotta ask.
You gotta ask.
One thing you can say is fine. That's fine. what a lot of Americans say. They just say fine.
Thank you.
I'm present. I'm here. I made it.
That counts for a lot.
That counts for a lot.
Counts for a lot. that counts for a lot. They repeated. That counts for a lot.
Everyone is happy that we're here. No matter what our energy is.
As we've always said, at the end of the day, butts in seats. We're trying to run a business here. So.
Decisions are made by those who show up, and we're here.
No one ever asks us to make any decisions, unfortunately.
Thank you.
Well, I kind of want to be in charge of some stuff.
Well, that's true, yeah.
Okay. I think we have one item of business, which is very exciting for my... I just found out about this before we started recording, so it's exciting for my Friday tomorrow. Our theme song composer, Chris Corkin's band Diary, just released their EP. It's called The Cutting Garden. It is available wherever you get your music. I'll be listening to it while I do my work tomorrow, so I'm very excited about that.
I love their single. I thought it was awesome.
Mm-hmm. Very
so, cool. We're as excited as we can be under the conditions of life right now. But yes, we're very excited. Go check them out. The band is Diary. Okay, you guys want to jump right into the wrestling? That's really not the best response.
That's what we're here for.
Did you want to do Buds, Thorns, and Blossoms, lady? I mean, how can I make you happy?
Well, I don't know if you have the power.
I don't, I'm no Tony.
You're no Tony.
True, I guess. We'll just get into the wrestling, shall we?
Yeah. I think that's right.
I think that's right, yeah. Okay, it was a scary and eventful week in Blackpool Combat Club world. So we're going to start with the low-key stuff, and then we'll get to the big news of the week. On Rampage, Mox and Claudio Castagnoli fought the Butcher and the Blade with the Bunny ringside. We hadn't seen her in a while, right?
I don't think so. I think she and Penelope got hurt around the same time. And they're both back. Yeah.
I'm really I've missed her. I like her unhinged, screeching energy. Mm-hmm. It's great.
When she screams and when men say, I find her off-putting, I say, yes,
that's what does. I want. I want women wrestlers to be off-putting to men, mostly. That's my major criteria.
So Mox and Claudio did win. Regal was on commentary. Hangman was backstage watching on a monitor. After the match, Mox and Claudio cut a little promo in which they explained that it's a kind of a the match on Dynamite is kind of a step up or be stepped on kind of situation.
I thought this one was kind of funny just because like Mox and Hangman have such like have such an intense sexual energy with each other, and then Claudio's like, yeah, and I'm also here.
He did have a little bit of that. It's like the toddler like that you told like, yes, you can say the final line, and he's so pleased and proud to be able to say, or you will get stepped on.
he really honestly was so proud and pleased with himself. And like through the whole thing, I just kept being like, listen, I support Eddie Kingston's rights and I support his wrongs. How does he hate Claudio?
Like Claudio's the most jolly Swiss man in the world. Yeah.
How do you have problems with Claudio?
In a way, you're just like, you're not well suited to wrestling because it's like you are just always out there playing around with the boys.
Just doing some spins.
I don't think there's that much to talk about with this match, just that it was kind of nice to see the Butcher and the Blade back, and I know.
It was. I like our classic old-timey jobber trios. Tag teams.
Got trios on the brain.
Yeah, you know, a number of men were out there. But yeah, it's so much nicer than seeing some kind of trust buster or embassy or other hotel name.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it was good to see him, but it did Leah, you brought this up because you were like, we've talked about this before on the podcast. And then I was thinking about, oh, go ahead.
No. I was just going to say that like on one of the guest pods when Sarah was here, like me and Anne got into a conversation with her about like, she was like, Trustbusters are there because the Acclaimed moved up and they need low level tag teams for people to be. And I think Anne, you and I were like, can't we just keep the ones that we have?
We've already got the Butcher and the Blade, the Varsity Blondes. Like, how many do we need? Yeah.
Come back to the Varsity Blondes later.
Right. And like watching them, I was like, I'm imprinted on these guys already. Yeah. Like, that's fine. I want to see them get beat.
Yeah. They're solid. They've got a good energy. They don't look like other people out there. Like, yeah.
I have a very confusing sexual relationship with the Butcher. We're like,
okay.
All right. Elaborate.
Just like throughout the match, I'll swing back and forth through extreme like ends of the spectrum where I'm like, that man repulses and terrifies me, and then I'll be like, I would let him hit it.
I sympathize. I agree with that. I think, yeah, I like the Blade is always doing it for me, yeah. And the Butcher sometimes is like, oh boy, but then other times it's like, well,
yeah, he could get it. But then again, could he? I don't know.
Yeah.
For me, it's neither of them. But,
You don't like the blade, even?
Not really. It looks kind of sleazy. But,
that doesn't do it for you.
No, it's like not the kind of sleaziness that does it for me. Like, it's like a specific. But I totally see where it's not a thing where I'm like, it's repulsive to want to hit it with those men. I'm just like, it's not for me. But I celebrate the two of you. I celebrate your indecision as well.
Not repulsive to want to sharpen the blade.
Okay. Well, I think we're just going to move right along. Okay, so this was the big news of the week. So on Dynamite, we had our Hangman Mox main event in Mox's hometown of Cincinnati. So at first, it was very good and a very fun match. Started great. So
I would say it was having a lot of fun.
I was enjoying myself thoroughly. Hangman showed up like really excited to fight. He interrupted Mox's journey to the ring to get the fighting started, which was like just really good because you were like, yes, that's, if you respect Mox, that is what you do.
Yeah. It's like you get in there, you hit him before the bell rings, you start bleeding gratuitously
as you can. Yes. Yeah. That's what he likes. That's what he loves.
And then Hangman was like picking his way through the crowd. I didn't know where he was going. It was great. Yeah. He got to the top of the, I guess, the upper level of the ramp and like
he moonsaulted off the. It looked so good.
And it was so good. And like,
he has the most beautiful moonsault in the biz. We've said it many times. And he just looks every time like there's a moment where he's suspended in midair. You're like, he'll never come down.
It's beautiful. Mm-hmm. And like, Mox barely caught him, but he just jumped right back up all powerful. And I was like, I don't know. Like, most of the time I kind of take their moves for granted and stuff. But at that moment, I was like, I can't imagine going to do a backflip off like a second story onto concrete and being, I don't think I can even do a trust fall really. So,
such a good point. Totally same. And it's interesting because I feel like, especially in the past 6 months, we've seen like a lot of, because Sting's been out there doing his jump spots, and Darby's always doing his jump. Jeff Hardy was doing his jump spots. Yeah. Men jump in wrestling. I don't know if you've heard of it. They jump from weird places. But this was the only one that actually made me be like, whoa, that looks like really, I don't know. It just looked insane.
I don't know what made it different, but maybe just because it's such a beautiful form moonsault. I don't know, but it's
touched by the gods.
Yeah, really.
I'm gonna say anyway. And so
maybe that's what happened. It was hubris. He flew too close to the sun.
Oh, Icarus. So the men did very sexual violence to each other. Good for them. We celebrate it. And then, so we're all enjoying ourselves. Then with 10 minutes left in the match, so I have here, Hangman landed a discus lariat. Then he charged into a King Kong lariat from Moxley. I love sentences like that where, like, to me, an idiot, I'm like, so who's doing what? Basically, they collided in midair. They both landed on the mat, on the ring. But Hangman, just wasn't moving. So immediately the match kind of stopped.
It was crazy. Honestly, like when this move happened, I thought it like looked super cool because like he like clotheslined Hangman and Hangman's feet like really went out from under him and like flew in the air. And it was like very dramatic looking. I was like, wow, I've never seen anyone do that before. Like what a cool move. And then it became clear that something had gone terribly wrong. And it was like, oh, because he was probably unconscious in midair is why his feet went at that angle like that. And then I felt real bad about it.
Yeah. Well, you know. Yeah, no. So that was not cool. This was a really bad part of the night. One laughs because you're at the bottom of the hole, but very scary.
They replayed it like a couple of times, and then commentary's tone was really changing, and it was becoming
In the moment, I was like, oh, that doesn't look good. Oh, that doesn't look good. Oh, like Paul Turner's walking over to him, and like they replayed it, and like commentary was vamping a little bit. Like they thought like it might just be like a spot. Like it there was like what? Like would you say like a confusing 30 seconds, maybe less than that? Probably. That was like just I don't know what's happening. And then all of a sudden he wasn't on camera. Taz was freaked out.
Taz was really rattled. Yeah.
Well, that part where like Excalibur was like rattling off rampage matches to kill time, and then Taz like interrupted like kind of by accident, and then was like, oh no, just keep doing that. Like it was like really a vibe of like he wanted to turn to the person near him and be like, I think this is what's going on, and then was like, well, I guess I'm still mic'd.
Right.
Keep talking.
Well, and I started to rewatch it because I was so upset that I like missed a lot of this, and I didn't get very far because we started the podcast. But like, yeah, even when they cut to commentary, so they were trying not to show it on camera, Taz was like, oh, they're bringing out a gurney. Like I can see, like the medical guys was like, oh, Taz, I don't think you're supposed to be like narrating this portion. But I can see how, I mean, he was just clearly really upset, which is very sweet.
I think everybody got really, really rattled because then someone gave Mox mic and he started vamping on the mic, and he was like, I hope Hangman walks and talks to his son again. And it was clear, like, you know, he was just vamping on the fly. He was trying to do like trash talk, but not trash talk. Like he didn't, like, I know that it wasn't like anything like crazy, but like in that moment I was like, he's not gonna walk again.
I know. Well, it felt so bad. Like I don't blame Mox at all, because it's like you just get handed a mic and you're upset, but like, well, oh my god.
And someone pointed out, I don't, it might have been Trevor Dame or something, was talking about, it's like Mox has like his whole it's kind of just Mox, but like his gimmick of like, you know, when you're in danger when you get in the ring with me. So it's like, it fully, the way that he was dealing with it on the mic to me, like, does fully make sense that he was like, well, you just got to run with it and say what Mox would say if it's a real injury. But it was very scary, and especially because they brought up the gurney, and like you were just like, I don't see how this could have caused, but like he'd hit his forehead, so it's like a thing where you're like, not a doctor, can that break your neck? And like, obviously anything can break your neck, actually, they're very delicate. So so that was really scary.
I was impressed that they stopped it and called the match like really quickly, actually. Like
everyone has said, like,
yeah, I think Dave Meltzer was saying that, like, everybody had praise for Paul Turner for calling it the way he did, like, the moment he did, so.
Which I think, like, with that much TV time left, like, there must be a fair amount of pressure. Like, you don't want to just, like, end the main event, like, with 10 minutes left or whatever. So I was just, like, thought that was impressive.
Yeah, but they did do, so basically, commentary vamped a little. They got Hangman out of there, later reported that Hangman was conscious again by the time he was leaving, and he gave the crowd a thumbs up. The Cincinnati crowd had been, like, really on, it's Mox's hometown, they've been really on Mox's side. They were chanting for Hangman as he left. Like, it seems like you're kind of like, okay, good job, crowd. I mean, not that a crowd would be, but there are crowds that would be bad, actually. It seemed like it was a good crowd. It was nice. And then they filled the last six-ish minutes, I think, with Mox and MJF, like, promo face-off. So MJF came out to say, I'm challenging you at Full Gear. And we're going to get into, like, what had happened in this ep that kind of, like, informs that the MJF arc. We won't really get into that here. But just, like, did you guys think that was a good... like that it worked. I mean, we were really rattled. Like, we weren't really going to be able to pay that much attention to anything, but it was a lot of time to fill at the end of the episode. Did you think it worked?
Yeah. So, like, would you say, like, a minute before this happened, commentary cut to the, like, where MJF had been sitting and watching, and they were like, he's gone. So
before the injury.
He was
always
planned to do a promo.
I was wondering that. Yeah.
Yeah. As soon as Hangman got pinned, I think he was going to come out. But I think they just had to make it so much longer than they intended. Mm-hmm. So, like, they had the content planned, but kind of, like, had to, like, get into the right groove. Which is, like, again, like, there's a reason why those two guys were the ones who did the first episode after All Out. Like, those two guys can vamp. So I do think yeah. that they did the best anyone could ever do.
Yeah.
But it also was like, I can't say that I was really focusing on the content of what they were saying. I was just like, okay, but is Hangman dead?
Yeah. I was like, CM Punk has cursed the Elite, and I think Hangman just died on screen. So yeah, I didn't hear a lot of it. If you have that much time to fill, like, on the fly, I think those two guys, like, even if it wasn't planned, are probably who you would, like, hand mics to and be like, just go do something. So, but I'm sure you're right that I think it was planned to have something. So, and yeah. I think they did, you know, a good job for what it was, for what I heard.
I didn't notice it at the time, but I did belatedly see a gif of Mox like saying something and then just like giving the camera the funniest look that I was like, I'm gonna be responding to stuff with that for the rest of my life. I'll track that down for us. So we'll just briefly touch on, so Hangman was diagnosed with a concussion, which is better than getting your neck broken, but not great to have a concussion. But everyone said that he was seeming pretty normal by the time he got to the hospital. So that's really good. And we hope that he heals up.
Yes. MJF tweeted prayers for Hangman, which also didn't make me feel less panicky that night before we'd heard anything, but it was very nice.
Everyone was very nice.
Yeah. He immediately followed it up with, I guess he's fine. Now I feel bad for being nice about it.
Like a poor, yeah.
Also, yeah. The exact wording of what people described him as was remarkably, impossibly normal. Girls, any time in your life has anyone ever described you as remarkably, impossibly normal?
No, it's aspirational.
Extremely aspirational.
Yeah, unlikely to happen anytime soon. So, but while Hangman is presumably going to be out for a while recovering, we are down to zero members of the Elite on AWTV. We're at a goose egg, girls. I will say that on Dynamite, Tony Schiavone did mention the Elite. He actually said the Elite had been stripped of the Trios.
Yeah.
He did, but was it just me? Did he sort of sound like he didn't quite mean to, but like he had backed himself into a sentence that he just had to get through, and nobody really responded to him about it?
He did quite uncertain, but it was hard to tell if it was the uncertainty of I didn't mean to say this, or I'm still second guessing if I'm actually allowed to say this. It was really difficult to know. But the Bucks were back in the Rampage promos or something. CM Punk was in an ROH clip show that they did. So there were a few things that people were pointing to, and this was after Meltzer had gone on a little rant on the Wrestling Observer Radio or whatever about how angry he is about how they haven't addressed any of this. Leah, yes,
you had some interesting thoughts about what Dave was doing there.
Well, I won't say all of my thoughts. I won't explain all of my thoughts, but I will say that in my mind, Tony does not like when Dave is that mad at him. And that's like my personal opinion.
Yeah.
That
I mean, Dave said that he wished that AEW would at least live up to the standards of a second rate wrestling promotion.
That was a burn. It was an absolute burn. And the way he said it, he knew it was a burn.
Yeah. Well, and you know that Tony Khan's been like listening to Meltzer for 30 years or whatever. So
it was a little bit the vibe, having read through everything he said, it was a little bit the vibe of like, it's like a wife at a dinner party who's saying something to someone else, but like her husband is sitting there being like, I know this is about me. It is an ultimatum. And if I don't take action, I am not going to like my life for the foreseeable future. So, and then we did hear that Ace Steel was officially let go, which apparently
like 2 days later,
didn't
see coming. It is wild. The fact that you can bite an EVP of your company and it takes 6 weeks to get fired. I mean, maybe he didn't see it coming because it's like no one had said anything to him about it for some month and a half. And it was like, I guess it was fine.
That's called a different personality type than mine. Like if I don't hear something about something for more than an hour, I'm like, I assume I'm going to be executed. I assume I'm going to be killed for what I've done.
I know this is just like my own ish, but I still don't really think that Ace Steel is a person. Like, is that...
It's like, crazy. He showed up out of nowhere like a Deus Ex Machina situation.
He gave an insane promo and then
got fined immediately the first time we saw him. Yeah.
And then he bit Kenny Omega. Like, that's not like a person. Like,
well, and then the only picture you ever see of him is that one where he's like grinning, that like rictus of a grin. So I agree, he's made up. But I believe the dirt sheet rumors are that the situation is potentially loosening. Kind of like phlegm, like we finally took a little Mucinex or something. Things are loosening up.
About time. I hope Meltzer just yells some more stuff this coming week and then they have to reinstate the
Say, Dave, get back into Tony's office and you tell him what to do. Mm-hmm. That's all I'll say.
Get things in shape here. About that.
This is a really quick sidebar about the Observer, but apparently Sarah was telling me that Dave is clearly like not heard anything from the Young Bucks. Like they're not talking to Dave, and Dave knows that they are talking to Alvarez, and he just keeps being like, "Well, I don't know anything about this. You know more than I do, Brian."
Why aren't they talking to Dave?
I think that they're actual friends with Alvarez, and so I think they're talking to him in the sense of like, they're like, "Yeah, no, we're fine. We can't talk to you. Like, we can't tell you anything on the record or whatever." And Dave is like, not
not on their group text.
Yeah, right.
That's so funny. It's
really funny that he just keeps passive aggressively being like, "Well, if there was news to share, it would be probably broken by you, Brian."
Honestly, that's like the most relatable Dave Meltzer has ever been to me, that he's like, kind of angling. He's like, "I'd love to be on that group chat, but it kind of seems like you won't let me into that group chat."
But like, you know, if you wanted to like set your phone down with unlocked, you know, I could take a little look. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so I guess we'll see how the situation develops. The only other thing to report from BCC World, not that it's, I mean, it's fun, is that Danielson and Yuta had a sit-down interview with Renee Paquette in which she was like, "Brian, did it hurt your feelings that Daniel Garcia turned on you?" And Brian Danielson was kind of like, not really. Like, he was like, he just gave this answer that was kind of like very like, "I see a lot of myself in him."
And I think he might have said like, "I think he's the best up and coming wrestler in the company." Or something.
Yeah. While Wheeler was sitting right next to him. Pretty aggressive.
So then Yuta like full freaked out and was just like, "I can't listen to this anymore. Like, you put me through hell to get in this group, and now you just forgive stupid Daniel Garcia for his many sins, and I hate it here. I hate you. I hate you." And then he stormed off. So I have said multiple times that I think that the boys should switch factions because it's like apprenticeships. Like, you get your showmanship apprenticeship and your violent wrestling apprenticeship. Do you think it's going to happen?
I would love it if it did. I have no idea, but that would be the funniest possible thing for them to do. I'm sorry. The idea of like Yuta like standing proudly next to Chris Jericho makes me so happy that I can't quite deal with it.
I would love it. And I think it would create a very rich backstory for them like going forward over the years, where it's like, were they there at the same time? No, but they actually share every experience, and there could be moments where they're looking at each other and they're like, "Yeah, that's Jericho. That's Daddy Jericho. That's what he does get up to." I would love that.
Like how you and producer
older brother Allie.
Yeah, that's right. Not Daddy Jericho.
That's on me. Yeah.
It's like how you and producer Marjorie worked at the same company, but not at the same time, because Marjorie took your job after you quit, and you guys Isn't just found out years later.
Yeah, wild. We didn't know each other at the time. We became friends and then later realized that I left a job and she filled that job. Because
I think you were like, "I had this crazy coworker and had a distinctive name." And then Marjorie was like, "I also had a crazy coworker by that name."
That is, I can't believe I always forget that that happened. And it is one of the craziest coincidences of my entire life.
Absolutely wild.
Wow. And and everyone at that workplace was insane.
I was just going to say also about the Jericho appreciate BCC stuff is like, I do think BCC might be on the verge of imploding a little bit. We haven't talked about MJF Regal yet, but I do think Regal next kind of wants to maybe go off with MJF, so I could see everything kind of splintering.
Yeah. Well, let's get into the MJF stuff and we can circle back on that. Leah, did you have something else you want to say this before we move on? Mm. Are you sure?
It was a joke that isn't going to make any sense now, so we'll just...
Sorry.
If you can find a way to weasel it in later, you save that as a little treat for your hungry gerbils.
I don't like that. Don't do that again. Hungry
gerbils. Your gerbils.
Don't like it.
Gerbils.
No, don't like it.
Okay, let's talk about it. Let's talk about MJF. So he cashed in his... as I've called it, his comfort novelty poker chip. He really, by the end of this whole deal, was clutching that thing like a little teddy bear, which I found quite sympathetic. But before that, in Dynamite, he had a little promo exchange, well, actually quite a significant promo exchange with William Regal. I don't seem to remember how it started. I think Regal was in the ring, and then MJF came out.
He was just going to talk, and then MJF came out and interrupted him.
Yeah. So MJF came out and told quite a long story about how back when he was 19, he got called up to be an extra in WWE, and he really impressed everybody with his wrestling. And then William Regal asked him to come back to a room and do a promo for him.
And he prove himself to him, yeah.
Prove himself to him. And boy, did I, he said. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's amazing. Good for you. And
it's really brave that he was willing to talk about that in front of somebody.
I know. It's really, we should be more open about those kind of experiences in the industry.
This is Ronan Farrow's next investigation. But, okay. So then Regal said, you're going to be a huge star. I'm going to hire you. Like, I'm going to get you a job. But then he found out that MJF was 19, and he was like, you're too young. We can't hire you. So I want you to send me a promo every month and so I can track your progress. And then in time, you'll become one of my boys, of my boys I got a job for.
Just take your shirt off and record a little video for me and send it to me.
And so MJF said he did that for 3 months, and on the third month, Regal was like, you suck, bro. You need to get better. Don't message me again until you're better. And so he's been carrying that around like a little hot coal in his chest all these years. And he read us the email. He got on his phone. He read us the email that William Regal sent him that crushed his spirit, but also created his spirit to be mean and mad and to prove them wrong, kind of. And then William Regal just looks like really happy. Like, he's like, this is the chillest thing I've ever heard.
He's like, this is what I wanted.
I know that it has to be really hard to figure out what to do with your face when someone's ranting at you. But the man made some deranged choices. He kept tilting his head, like, at 25. like when a dog, like, talk, like you're talking to a dog. It was, like, really weird. But, like, he was, like, also smirking. I don't really know that, like, some of those faces were what... could have happened.
He looked electrified by what MJF was saying to him. He was having a good time.
Like, very much like, my long-term storytelling of manipulation is paying off. Perfect. my Frankenstein has come back to find me in the Arctic, and unlike Victor, I am here for it. I love it. Mm-hmm. He was doing that, and he basically was like, yeah, I was trying to make you work harder. Because, like, I thought you needed a fire lit under you, and I think I was kind of right, because it seems like you don't have a belt, like, and you cheat a lot, so, like, kind of seems like maybe you should have paid attention to me, and you should win a belt and stop hitting people with your beautiful Dynamite diamond ring. And MJF looked kind of like, you know, that kind of got through to him. This was a really interesting promo that got... a lot of praise. I mean, it's like, it really, like, people were like, this is the promo of MJF's career, or close to, like, this was, you know, great. What did you guys think?
I thought it was great. I thought the fact that he came, I don't know that it's, well, with MJF, it's sort of saying the best of his career is sort of like, there's that big yet where it's like, he's just going to keep getting better and better, you know? But like that, the fact that he came out and the whole crowd was booing the shit out of him, you know? Because this is Mox's crowd. This is Mox's, like, people. Like, they in no way are going to back Max. They are booing the crap out of him. And then within like, what, 2 minutes, they're spellbound. They're like, nobody's even really talking because they're like, he's going to read us an email.
Okay, I don't appreciate you also saying it like the men on Twitter are saying it, when it's like the men on Twitter are tweeting being like, so crazy, you got them interested in an email. I'm like, if somebody tells me they're gonna read a private email they received, it could be my mailman and I don't know anyone in their life, and I'm immediately on tenterhooks. I'm like, shit, true. Yes, get it. Read you the email.
This is the good gossip.
To me, I'm like, that's a shortcut. You read the email? Come on, Max. I did like it very much. Yeah, what'd you think, Anne?
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was really good. Like, I thought the delivery was amazing. Like, it really was very similarly structured to his promos with Punk, where it's like, even though I'm 25 years old, like, I have a lot of history with everybody and I have a lot of grievances that I've been kind of brooding over. So it was like really effective that way. I did think it was funny, and I don't think this is like a knock on it exactly, but it did strike me as funny a lot because like his delivery was very much like, you have killed my entire family. But what he was saying he did was like, you sent me a mean email one time.
No. You said you'd give me a job. Then you said I was too young and pretty to get the job. And then you sent me a not nice email.
Yeah.
And my life was ruined.
And that, yeah, exactly. My life is ruined. Although, like I think it totally makes sense for MJF to be like a petty little man child who like broods over all these things. And I do you think it's funny that in some ways MJF's heel character is the same as CM Punk's real life character, where it's just like, I have been brooding over tiny slights for months and I'm gonna lose it about them. Like, told Dave Meltzer that I got Colt Cabana fired and he shares a, you know,
it is why, if CM Punk hadn't lost his full GD mind and gone nuclear, I was pretty mad at him at the time already, but I was prepared for like when he's back and MJF's back and they get in a, you know, a thing again. Yeah, it's going to be great because they are like made to be mirrors. So I was going to love it probably against my will. I was going to be like, at the very least, I was going to be saying things like, it's, you know, it's good art. You got to give credit where it's due. It's good art.
And that like mirroring would work really well. Yeah. It's too bad that it's not CM Punk's character. It's his whole personality. So
yeah, that's bad. Yes.
Detriment for sure.
That's actually bad. Yeah. Yeah. I think this is one where, a lot of times I'll be like, I think something was good or bad, and I think I'm right about it. This is, and everyone else is wrong. This is one where I'm like, I don't think people are wrong, but it didn't, I thought it was good, and I thought it did what it had to do, and I thought it was like exactly right for his character, and like, it's just like everything. I'm like, yeah, it's really good. They're good at their jobs. But also, I did just find it really funny. And I kept being like, this isn't hitting me emotionally because I think, unfortunately, in comparison to the Punk stuff, like the Punk stuff is so, the stuff that happens to you in childhood and creates your traumatized little mind is so rich and intimate. And then in comparison, a man that you don't know telling you in a back room he'll give you a job and not giving you a job and then he sends you a mean email is like less for me. Yeah. And then also William Regal started talking about how he joined a circus.
He fought all the carnival men. Yeah.
I would say like the circus thing was probably like not that effective.
Yeah. And I think for me too, like the MJF thing, like I think if it hadn't mirrored the Punk thing so specifically, like it did feel like a little bit of a rerun for me. I think it might have hit a little harder emotionally if it wasn't like, and here's another grievance from the far past kind of thing. So
I don't disagree with you, but for some reason, that's why it did work. You know, that I'm just like, MJF has a million of these. Like, I feel like he could get, you know, Jerry Lynn out here and be like, one time when I was 5 years old, you cut in front of me at Aldi's. You know what I mean? And like, that is his character, that he's every bad thing that has ever happened to him. He is holding so tightly in his heart and like, brooding over it, and like he's so like he's just powered by spite, and so like it's interesting to me because weirdly a lot of men on the internet watched that promo and was like, he's gonna turn face any minute, and I'm keeping like, that would be a huge waste, but like how do you turn that face, you know what I mean, like when somebody is that like he's so young, but you get the feeling like his heart is just like twisted. And that's delicious. Yeah. Like,
no, I really think that's all so smart. And the thing it made me think of that is kind of an interesting commentary on wrestling as a medium is I'm like in the movie of like MJF the character, the TV show of MJF the character, all of this stuff can't truly pay off or work actually exactly right until the day way down the line when someone says to MJF, this is the truth of your personality, is that you hold tight to everything that happens to you and you build these resentments and they get so big that you can't think right. or live or be happy. Right. And then that is, you know, if you're going to face turn him, like in my opinion, right. you face turn him on the realization that like the resentment that you're holding on to is making you unhappier than starting to let go of those resentments right. would. Right. And, but so then like the parallelism of like this promo and the promos with Punk and probably promos that will come in many other feuds doesn't really fully come into play until somewhere down the line when someone is like, look at every single fight you get into. You get into fights because you take everything personally, even people trying to do you kindness.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. And get so like self-pitying and yeah, just like collapsing in on yourself about it. Yeah, completely.
And I think that's cool. I mean, I think that's cool. It's, yeah. And I think it's again, like, I think this was great. It just didn't like light a fire under me, but I do appreciate it. And with MJF, like I actually do have some trust. I mean, things can go wrong all the time, but I'm like, I think you'll pay that off. Like, I think you'll cash that chip in down the line and you'll have a promo that like has callbacks to this stuff that makes me be like, yeah, it all works together.
Yeah.
I like
yeah.
it.
And I could see from this more, like I was saying, like, cause Regal was very like, I'm a bad man, but I'm not like a dirty cheater like you kind of thing. But I could see like Regal looks so excited by this whole like grievance world. I could see him wanting to be a bad man, you know, it's like, and he could really take MJF places, you know, I could see him thinking that and maybe spiraling off that direction.
Yeah. I think that's right. Like it could be like a thing where like, and like Regal's like, let me tell you how to be really bad. Let me tell you how to be a real, what does he call himself? I keep wanting to call him an ODB, like an old dirty
boy. It was something like that.
Something
though,
like that.
Ordinary. Big combat boy. BCB. The BCBs of the BCC.
That anyways, one's free. Like if he's like, I'm going to show you how to be a real heel, like mm-hmm. that is something like you could see him doing.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, for sure. I'm going to take you to the circus, and you're going to bleed out of all of your orifices.
That was wild. I was just like,
that was crazy.
Wow, William Regal's always really...
The thing about William Regal is, like, he's, unlike Ace Steele, he's not saying the F word in it, so he's getting away with a lot, actually.
He's like, if you get creative, you can say much filthier things than the F word, and they will absolutely. Not censor you at all.
And, like... confusingly filthy. Like you're like, I'm really troubled, but I kind of don't even know exactly why or what's going on here.
Did you guys see that Excalibur the other day was like, yeah, my wife is really on edge when it comes to people.
No, that's so funny.
I like the idea that she's like, I could lose him at any minute.
She's like, I can't think of these kinds of sweet little nothings to say to him. Well, I think that the interesting thing about like William Regal teaching him how to be a BCB or something is this is the only thing I've ever read on Cage Side Seats that I'm like, that's actually quite rich. That's really good work. And the thing that Manolo, my good friend Manolo, said this week was he was like, I think he said, nobody fears MJF. That's the missing element in his path towards greatness. If he can accomplish respect in the ring, that's the game changer for the longevity of the character. And I'm like, that's right. Respect plays a really big role in his life. Like he wants it. He can't have it. If he can't have it for even a second, he loses his mind. And I was like, that is something, the idea of like MJF wanting to be what like Mox is, where it's like people fear him. Which it's true, they don't. Like, they're like, you are really annoying. And, like, sometimes you, like, are really annoying to a degree way more than other people manage to be. Like, you actually, like, mess up somebody's whole deal. But, like, you're mostly just annoying.
Yeah. People who are actually better than you and they know it, they don't have to say it every 5 minutes. So,
yeah. You know. So that was very interesting to me. Manolo also said, he said, Darby Allin and Sammy Guevara, if wrong, get rid of him, are in the same boat, needing a nemesis to make them mature. And I was like, that's... you are Manolo. Now we're entering the territory. And that's what, I mean, I think that I'll just be interested to see what happens with MJF, because having Punk as a nemesis was such huge, like, clearly, like, really launched the character in a way, because it was, you know, anytime two men are mirroring each other and, you know, they're touching hands, then that is good storytelling. So who will touch Darby's hand? And who will kick Sammy into a pool and never come back out? Okay. Well, anything else to say about this, my friends?
No, that's all really good.
We said a lot of good stuff.
We were very smart in this segment, I'll say that.
Guys, we really did it for a change. Well, the thing is, the thing that you have to give, I mean, I give MJF a lot of credit, but he does give us English majors something to dig our teeth into. Mm-hmm. And many of these men, we're like begging them. We're like, this is one promo that we can do a light little read on,
yeah.
But they won't do it. They're just like, and I'm going to beat you because I want to beat you so bad.
They're like, my character is, I really like wrestling and I want to win.
And I love winning at wrestling. Eat fucking shit. My God. Okay. Jericho, Mr. Jericho, my favorite man. So not even starting with Jericho, so I don't know why I said that. Dalton Castle showed up on Rampage with his posse of boys to challenge Jericho for the ROH belt. He called Jericho a silly little goose. This was my favorite thing that's ever happened. Maybe like, it was like one of the only joys of my week.
It was so funny. I really, people should, they've got to be digging out insults like that more often. I think like it sent me to the moon. It was perfect.
And didn't the crowd like start chanting goose? Yes.
And they started chanting goose.
And Taz was like, we've got a goose chant.
Yeah. In that tone, like, got a goose chant. Like it's that time of the night.
This is a rowdy crowd. We got a goose chant going. Absolutely loved it. Anyway, so he challenged Jericho. They fought on Dynamite. Jericho did retain the ROH title because Dalton Castle had the ROH title at one point. I don't think I said that. But not before Jake Hager, wearing Daniel Garcia's purple bucket hat that he didn't want, got caught in the boy zone. That's what commentary said.
He's finding his way out of the boy zone.
Finding his way out. That's like... it's one of those things where they said it, or whoever said it, and I was just like, yeah, it's all of wrestling. But you've never said it like that before, and I love this. And I hope that as you hear it, you're like, wow, wrestling is often just kind of one big boy zone.
That you got to fight your way out of.
You got to fight your way out of the boy zone, yeah.
Get out of that boy zone. Yes, what was I going to say? Oh, yeah, and then after the match, Jericho... gently, carefully, and lovingly pile driver Jerry Lynn. Beautiful. You love to see a man just be so careful.
Just take such good care of Jerry Lynn.
It was honestly, like, it cracked me up because he was like, I don't care. I'll do anything. I'm a bad guy. I'm dishonoring everybody. And then just sweetly and so softly turned Jerry Lynn upside down and said, we're going down now. Hold on.
We're going down now, baby. Shh, Jerry, shh.
I got you.
I was talking to my friend Nico, and they made like a really innocuous comment about Jericho. We're just like, oh, he doesn't know what story he's on. I like flipped out. And Jericho is a generational talent.
Unfortunately, he is. He is always doing good work.
Do we like it? Is it good? Is it comfortable? No.
Are we happy to support Jericho and his insurrectionist wife? Of course we're not.
No,
it sucks. Listen, I can't deny it.
I was about to be like, we would never buy Jericho merch, but we did buy that bit of the bubbly.
And it tasted weird, but none of us got hangovers even though we drank a whole bottle.
We actually have financially supported.
Are we going to do it again for our second anniversary podcast?
I think we'd probably better if they still have any in the cellars.
Yeah, right.
I wish that like any other wrestler was like selling alcohol so we had options. But
I think it was just brandy.
Yeah. Damn
it. Well, maybe one of them will have. It's really not an area that a lot of the wrestlers seem to be getting into, novelty wines.
I think Brian Danielson's wife has some novelty wines, so.
Okay, well, I guess I could financially support his garden.
What is that drink that Chuck is always talking about? It's like, Was it?
Oh,
the like Kentucky
whiskey that we were like Kentucky gentleman sponsored by them.
It's like it's like whiskey and 7-Up or something. Do you know what I'm talking
about? They drink it with Diet Dr. Pepper sometimes, I think.
We can't live the way that those men did when they were drinking those drinks on the regular. They can't be drinking them anymore as much as they did. Well, let's move on.
Are you sure?
I mean, he was drinking it on Twitch. What was that, last year?
Oh, no.
That's
on Twitch? He's never been on Twitch. He's never Twitched. That's not right.
We never get to see him Twitch.
And you were there, and you were there. I love Dalton Castle, and I would like to give him a special award. Somebody pointed out that, so he has these high-waisted panties. They're so mm-hmm. high-waisted.
So high.
And someone was like, I think there's something going on there, because he broke his back, and they were like, I think there's some support in there, it might be a safety thing. I was like, great. I'm so glad when wrestlers protect themselves and their bodies. I love that. Set it aside. It's fashion, baby. The man is out there in sparkly granny panties. I love it. I think he looks amazing.
He shoved his hand all the way down there and rooted around for like a full minute before he pulled a middle finger out of it. Whoo, that's showmanship. That's theater.
He also has such an interesting body. Like, I think he has almost some kind of like old-timey body, but in the way that like Marilyn Monroe does, but like thick. He's like thick in a very like good way.
I'm with you.
Well, yes, because if you get a bikini top on top of those high-waisted panties, we're in that old-fashioned bathing suit territory. I would love to see it, Dalton, if you care to.
And I feel like his vibe is like, he'd be like, oh yeah, sure, help me pick one out. Absolutely.
Yeah. He's probably got a matching teal one. He just wears backstage.
That's great. Anyway, I love him. I think he looks great. I loved the match. I loved the Boyzone. It was the only time I've ever loved Jake Hager, probably, and now I'll probably love him forever.
He went crazy for that bucket hat when they took it away, and it was like, I think this is why Chris Jericho loved Jake Hager so much. Now I get it.
That moment in that promo last week when like they were all talking, and then Jake Hager from the back, and he's like, and I love this hat! That was the moment that I was like, you may stay.
Yeah, do you keep track of the Boyzone? Imagining like Jake Hager and Jericho having these conversations where Jericho is like being like, Jake, you're so funny when it's just the two of us, but I think you get kind of caught up in your head when you're on camera. Like, just be free, buddy. Just be yourself. The people are gonna love it.
Show the people the Jake Hager that I get to see.
My special comfort goat, Jake Hager.
When it's me and you, it's a laugh a minute.
I thought you were just gonna say it's electric, and I liked that too. It's like, so true. It's electric between them. But they have. No one else can understand. All right. Tony said this week, we won't really get that deeply into it, but Tony said this week that the hope is that there will be an ROH TV show in 2023. My hope is that there'll be an ROH TV show tomorrow.
I know. I hope it get them all out of here. Ship them away. They keep running in new ROH people that I don't care about. And
there's no room in the clown car, Tony.
No.
It's full.
We'll transfer to being like a full-time ROH podcast.
Absolutely.
Obviously. Yeah. Sure.
What I've said, and I'm on the record, to me, based on everything that's happened on TV thus far, ROH is a show for boys. It's for boys to watch. And you might say, that's essentialist, that's reductionist. Fine. Okay. Anyone can watch it. But it's for boys.
But what's interesting to me is that I don't think that that's what it was before Tony bought it. Because, like, Danhausen came from there. Like, Dalton came from there. Like,
yeah.
Someone
the squid face, Jonathan Gresham.
Yeah, Jonathan Gresham. The Bleacher Report review I was reading was like, Prince Nana doesn't work on AEW because that's an AEW character. Like, that's an ROH character. And I was sort of like, why does ROH before AEW sound cool and what they're doing now sucks?
Well, I think like part of it is just we now see almost none of our faves. We get to see best friends in OC. We love them so much. Of course, it's a pleasure to watch our boys. But many of our other great loves are gone from us, and they are replaced with ROH men who are consorting with our most hated rivals, the Pinnacle. So it's like, you know, you're beat when you were born. Like, you show up and you're hanging out with FTR. Like, yeah, we hate you. We hate your guts.
Yeah, if they were giving me ROH content that was like Dalton Castle fights Jonathan Gresham, you know, and Danhausen, like, sure, yeah, of course I'd be into it. But this embassy and whatever. It's not. It's, doing.
I don't think we're not even going to get that section, but it's like the embassy, the kingdom, the pinnacle, the bop, the but, the. And I said it's like they're YA fantasy factions. Like it's like this is a whole like world building thing for like the stupid light lark or whatever.
Yeah.
So.
That's ROH has a map in the front of the book, and I don't care for it.
It has a map in the front of the book, and it hasn't proven to me that the prose is good enough to make the map.
That's right. Yep.
So you got to earn your map.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about, Leah, this one's for you, baby.
Thank you so much.
Private party. You want to tell us what happened with them this week?
Tony. I need you to listen to me for a minute.
Tony happened.
Tony. Tony, do I have your attention? I have so little joy in my life since Matt Jackson went away. I told you that there was one thing that I was looking forward to. There was one moment that I was hoping to just put away my care. Just, like, take it off like a backpack and for once experience happiness.
She wanted to lay down her troubles.
She did. She put that on the record. She told us.
All I wanted. And you gave me 2 minutes and 10 seconds.
What he said?
You fucking kidding me?
He said, "Sometimes joy can be so fleeting, Leah, and that's beautiful. It's here for a moment, then it's gone. A butterfly, you know, flies away. Sometimes. But wasn't it beautiful in the moment that you saw it?
No,
Leah, don't cry because it's over.
Laugh because it's happened. Thank you, Anne. That's right, Leah. Laugh because it happened. That's what I say to myself every day about the Elite. Don't cry because it's over. Laugh because it happened. Oh. And then we come on this podcast and we pass on this deranged viral energy to everyone who listens. We love it.
Yeah, they love to laugh. That's what they say all the time.
Okay. Well, so you didn't get enough of your sweet boy's private party. But did you like what happened? Like, did you like the result?
Yeah, of course I love that. You did. The firm just is holding all of these men captive.
That Matt Hardy has also been sold to the firm.
and of course that's what I like, but the fact that it was so disrespected. On Rampage, of all places. Mm.
On Rampage, too. That is
to only get 2 minutes on Rampage.
To get rough. A squash match on Rampage is just
and you're not a woman.
You're not even a woman.
And then I also just keep getting mad because I'm like, if BTE existed, the amount of work that they would be doing, like I would be watching so many skits. And this is honestly,
I wouldn't be watching them, but they'd be there. Yeah, for sure.
Tony, I would be watching them for sure.
Tony, if you like. The fact that you think that you can risk your life and limb to do a meet and greet, like, I'm going to be there.
The fact that he's doing a meet and greet right now is wild. So bold. And I, like, looked at the replies, and they were 100% all, Tony, you going to tell us what's going on with the Elite? Like,
what if Dave ordered him to do it? That's a little punishment in a game that they're playing. I'll say no more.
It's like Mitch McConnell doesn't do community town halls. You know, he's my senator. He never goes in public. And there's a reason, Tony Khan. Just something to think about.
And Tony doesn't even have Mitch McConnell's turtle body where he looks like he could retreat into his shell and protect himself in a dangerous situation. But
Mitch
Tony
McConnell
doesn't
just has
have
to
that.
Get yelled at restaurants around town. So, which happens
thank God.
Fairly routinely.
You know what?
So.
Shout out to the people of Kentucky for giving Mitch McConnell what for. Well, I this week said that I think Matt Hardy has a beautiful mouth. So everything is really going good with me, and I think it is quite beautiful. He's got very plush lips, actually.
Tony Khan, does that motivate you to get the Elite back on screen?
Tony looks pained and confused. He's like, to do what?
You've got to take some of the sexual energy off of us. It's coming out bad places.
It is starting to leak.
Yeah.
It's like when
we
you're
have a focal point of Matt Jackson. Yeah, it just like we start shooting wild. Like we like it's like a machine gun.
It's just no, it's like every time we see a member of the Elite, like when you're fermenting something, you're burping it. So we see them and we open the cap and the gases dissipate. Yeah. But we haven't burped.
Tony put us in a non-fermentation safe bottle, I think.
Absolutely.
And that's a recipe for disaster.
Well, we know very well it could literally explode and disintegrate. Yeah. And it could really seriously harm us or the people near us.
All the people near us.
Like our loved ones.
Could seriously injure Matt Hardy for sure.
If I'm too He's close to him prepared. Telling him how beautiful his mouth is, yes, he could be in danger. I am a danger to Matt Hardy, but not through any fault of my own.
No, because you're being neglected because you haven't been burped.
I haven't. Show me my beautiful elite. Burp me. Burp me, baby. Okay, do you guys want to talk about Tony Schiavone or Nyla and Jade? I kind of want to talk about Nyla.
Nyla,
yeah. Okay, great. Tony Schiavone match. We'll circle back to them because we'll be seeing parts of it again. So no worries.
I'm sure we will. They'll rerun it. No problem.
Does one of you want to explain? I don't think we've talked about this at all on the podcast yet, have we?
I don't think so.
So does one of you want to explain where this all began?
I don't remember who Jade was fighting. Perfect. Was it Anna Jay?
Yes, queen. We don't know.
I don't remember either. It was just like on Rampage, Nyla stole the belt. That's all I know.
So Jade was fighting somebody. I think it was possibly Anna Jay. It could have been Penelope. I don't know. It doesn't super matter. Anyway, so Jade's fighting somebody. It was like a title shot. And then all of a sudden, like as she's like pinning them, Nyla comes running out, steals the belt, and then runs away. And this happens in like the last like 10 seconds. And then like Taz is just like, well, good night. The whole week, Nyla is trolling Jade on Twitter. She is posting, like, as your TBS champion, I will do this, this, and this. She took the belt home with her. So she's, like, posing with it at home. Like, and she is at replying Jade just being annoying. And Jade is, like, engaging it. Because Nyla has been picking at Jade when she's been doing this thing where she's, like, Jade, now that you're the TBS championship, I have some movie requests. Will you ask TBS to play this movie for me? And Jade is always, Jade treats Nyla the way MJF treats Max Caster.
Obsessed with that comparison. Yes.
Yeah. Beautiful. Love
it. But now Nyla has gotten Jade's attention. And so Jade is replying to each tweet and being like, give me my fucking belt back.
I hope that Max Caster is cornering Nyla backstage and being like, I got to learn from you. I got to learn from you because I can't get under this guy's skin. I'm not doing a good enough job. I'm not up to your level.
He's got to steal that ring.
Nyla has always been so funny on Twitter.
She's
and it
so
is
funny.
Like really delightful that this is like now a storyline because I don't even remember all the stuff that happened. So Nyla fought Anna Jay.
She's like giving promos where she's like, possession's 9/10 of the law.
I know.
Amazing.
She fought her and she came out with the belt. And like, she was like, this is a title shot. Like, I'm defending the belt. And like, what did Excalibur, somebody on commentary was like, the assumed TBS champion or something like that? The alleged
I don't know. I missed that.
I think I missed that
so
too.
Funny.
So
but
funny.
Then on Dynamite, Jade did cut a promo because Jade tried to get the belt back on Rampage and it failed. But she did beat up some security guards who must unionize.
It
is the worst job in wrestling. But Jade said that Nyla needs to bring the belt back for Rampage. Tony needs to get the situation under control. And if Nyla doesn't bring the belt back and give it to her, she's going to hold Rampage hostage for the full hour. And she said it, and I was like, babe, please.
That'd be such a good episode of
Rampage. I've never loved you more, Jade. All I want is you careening around the backstage. That's the full episode, is you backstage hunting down the belt.
Yes.
They really should, like, because, I mean, Rampage is like an hour on Friday. They, like, treat it like trash as it is. So it's like they should do very special episodes that are just, like, hijinks.
Like this
and
is a
honestly,
episode.
Yeah,
it's a bottle
episode exactly.
And if Jade were having encounters with Ring of Honor people on her quest to get the belt back,
she could
from
wrestle
Nyla,
all of them.
I would give Tony so much leeway. I'd be like, sure, I'll meet all of your Ring of Honor guys while I'm having my fun, my lively fun.
Yeah.
But I think this is great because, like, Nyla has always been so fun and funny on Twitter, and this like really leans into like one of like it's just like she's naturally
this
like
is her strength,
a great troll.
And
just like she comes off so well, like Jade is coming off so well because
it puts Jade in a defensive place without actually risking the belt. Like she doesn't have to lose to anybody, but she is on her back foot, which is what she needs.
And she does do like a pretty good straight man, really. Like, I mean, it's a sympathetic place to be in. Yeah, I feel like for Nyla too, it's kind of like I guess Miro in WWE, they like didn't let him be funny for a while, but he's just very naturally funny. And it's like, yeah, you just got to let that rip. And I feel like they're at that place with Nyla where it's like, yeah, just be your hilarious personality. It's fantastic. Yeah.
And based on some stuff that Nyla has said, without really getting into it, it seems like, I don't know if like they told her not to be funny. Like she definitely has some stuff where she's like, well, people respond to me in a certain way because they're bigots. So yeah, that is difficult for me at times, but this just seems so good. And this I love her so much. So and mm-hmm. I hope that Jade holds Rampage hostage.
That would be so good. That's all I want in the world.
And then we have basically no time left, but we will just briefly say that the Best Friends did fight Death Triangle on Dynamite this week. It was a really fun match. They did not win. They didn't get the belts.
No.
Dustin didn't get pinned.
Trent so took the
huge.
Pin.
Big. That was big.
That's true friendship from little Trent.
Sweet. I feel like Trent looked over at Chuck and was like, it's looking rough over there these days.
Yeah, he needs it. He needs it.
You need a treat. You need a little treat.
He needs it, and his girls need it. So
yeah, his girls need it bad. Mm-hmm.
This was the first Best Friends match, I want to say, since like August, that I wasn't having some sort of emotional crisis during. And so I was like, yeah, I enjoy watching them wrestle. This was fun. I had a great time. These are the people that I like to wrestle. That's nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was, yeah, just very straightforwardly nice. I was really pleased when I was reading the Cage Side Seats recap and Manny's being like, this is what the trios division is supposed to be about. And I was like, so true. Because of the perfect and beautiful Best Friends, they're doing an amazing job. The one thing that did happen in the match that we'll just touch on really quickly was that Pac did want to do more hammer cheating, and Fenix intervened and was like, babe, no, we're not doing the hammer stuff anymore. Absolutely not. And so looks like maybe down the line we're going to have some Death Triangle, issues potentially leading to a split. I do just want to briefly check in. Do you guys think that Death Triangle are going to retain the belts until the Elite return, if they ever return? And do you think they will take the titles back at that time?
I don't think so. I don't think they'll let them touch it for a while.
Oh,
literally. No,
that's
idea.
Interesting because everybody, the reason I asked, I'm like, everybody is talking about it. Like,
really?
They're going to come back. They're going to fight Death Triangle. Not everybody, but just like, you know, as I float around the internet seeking opinions.
Well, I would like it if that was like a kind of like apology, like if Tony apologized to them for.
Yeah, I think he should apologize for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
To them, to us. Mm-hmm. And we know that the Bucks love fighting the Lucha Brothers. They love it. It's their favorite.
It is really interesting that the Lucha Brothers, the Death Triangle, Best Friends, and Elite are all three at their very best when one of the three is fighting like another member of that, you know?
Mm-hmm. They play really good together. Well, I think it's like cause they have a good thing where it's like they're it's the combination of like their personalities, their fighting styles, the way they choreograph matches, the stuff they like doing in matches. Like they do all just mix and match extremely
very
well.
Very well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Maybe it's like I love Death Triangle more than I ever have because they play nice with all my beautiful voice.
Because they haven't punched anyone backstage.
They've never punched anyone. Well, I don't know, actually. But
who knows what they're up to?
That's true. I don't really know what they're up to, but I love them. Anyway, it's interesting because I do think, unfortunately, I'm like, I kind of, not unfortunately. Unfortunately, if it doesn't happen, but I think that a Death Triangle Elite like trios match for the belts would slap, and it would be an apology to me.
Yeah.
And it would be an apology to them, and it would be a match of the year. And Dave Meltzer would sob. He would cry.
He would
be like,
my voice
yeah. back.
It would be absolutely the match of the year. It would be one of the best things that's ever happened. I just have hit a point where I'm like, well, that's why Tony won't do it.
That's why
because
he won't
we
do
would
it.
Like
yeah.
it too much.
Yeah.
He's going to let the Elite come back, but they're not allowed to wrestle, and only Brandon wrestles, and they have to be Brandon Cutler's Brandon Cutler. All of them.
Do you know that Brandon is still wrestling as the Stooge, and he's wrestling with the Being the Elite theme song? Like, he hasn't gone back to the Dragon. He's, but, him. Like, who is he stooging
for? That's loyalty.
For?
That's true loyalty.
Brandon.
Well, that's Brandon is standing up, and he's saying, even in absentia, those are my...
Those are my bullies. They're my bullies, and I am loyal to them.
It's a love story.
He's like, he mutters JFL to himself. And then he just sprays himself in the face with cold spray.
Remember the days when on a Monday you could just watch a little VTE and watch Brandon Cutler say "Job for Life" to himself
in the middle of your little workday, little relief.
It really, you know, I have a this is actually quite troubling, but I have a lot of different notifications set up to remind me to do things, and I do have a notification for Being the Elite that's just like, this is when it's supposed to come out, and usually I go watch it, and I still get the notification, but there's nothing.
Oh, man. There's nothing. There's nothing there.
Okay, well, you know, really all our traditional best, but so meaningfully to Hangman Adam Page and his beautiful family. And we hope that you take the time you need and recover from your concussion and come back someday. And we hope everybody comes back.
Hopefully soon. Yeah. Hopefully we soon. We can't take a lot more of this.
we come back next week. Like, yeah. I hope we're all here.
Hope we make it through the tunnels. Hope we make it across that rainbow bridge with the Elite. I hope that Tony gets a tomato thrown at him by a member of the public.
Oh, wow. And someone could. That's an idea for anybody out there at that meet and greet.
It's going to be me in a ski mask.
Yeah. Good for you. I'll chip in for your plane ticket.
This is for Isaiah Cassidy.
And I'll chip in for the tomato.
You buy the ticket, I'll buy the tomato, baby. Seems fair. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Well, until then, I've been Allie.
I've been Ann.
And I've been Leah.
And this has been Tunnel Talk. Our show is produced by Marjorie Voinovich. Our theme song is by Chris Corkin. You can find us on Twitter at Tunnel Talk Pod, via email at tunneltalkpod@gmail.com. Please say hello, because we're really in the pits of despair, so we kind of need the support of our community right now. Please rate, review, and subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts, and come back for more of this cheery goodness next week.